Chapter 23. That night Manchin told me that all through the day's proceedings Cochinette had some clerks concealed in the embrasure of a window who were to make a special report garbling Jones' answers and twisting them from their right meaning. Ah, that was surely the cruelest man and the most shameless that has lived in this world. But his scheme failed. Those clerks had human hearts in them, and their base work revolted them, and they turned to and boldly made a straight report, whereupon Cochin cursed them, and ordered them out of his presence with a threat of drowning, which was his favorite and most frequent menace. The matter had gotten abroad, and was making great and unpleasant talk, and Cochin would not try to repeat this shabby game right away. It comforted me to hear that. When we arrived at the citadel next morning, we found that a change had been made. The chapel had been found too small. The court had now removed to a noble chamber situated at the end of the great hall of the castle. The number of judges was increased to 62, one ignorant girl against such odds, and none to help her. The prisoner was brought in. She was as white as ever, but she was looking no whit worse than she looked when he had first appeared the day before. Isn't it a strange thing? Yesterday as he had sat 5 hours on that backless bench with her chains in her lap, baited, badgered, persecuted by that unholy crew, without even the refreshment of a cup of water, for she was never offered anything, and if I have made you know her by this time you will know without my telling you, that she was not a person likely to ask favors of those people. And as he had spent the night caged in her wintry dungeon with her chains upon her, yet here she was, as I say, collected, unworn, and ready for the conflict. Yes, and the only person there who showed no signs of the wear and worry of yesterday. And her eyes, ah, you should have seen them, and broken your hearts. Have you seen that veiled deep glow, that pathetic hurt dignity, that unsubdued and unsubduable spirit, that burns and smolders in the eye of a caged eagle, and makes you feel mean and shabby under the burden of its mute reproach? Her eyes were like that. How capable they were, and how wonderful. Yes, at all times and in all circumstances they could express, as by print, every shade of the wide range of her moods. In them were hidden floods of gay sunshine, the softest and peacefulest twilights, and devastating storms and lightnings. Not in this world have there been others that were comparable to them. Such is my opinion, and none that had the privilege to see them would say otherwise than this which I have said concerning them. The seance began. And how did it begin, should you think? Exactly as it began before, with that same tedious thing which had been settled once, after so much wrangling. The bishop opened thus. You are required now, to take the oath pure and simple, to answer truly all questions asked you. Joan replied placidly. I have made oath yesterday, my lord, let that suffice. The bishop insisted and insisted, with rising temper. Joan but shook her head and remained silent. At last she said, I made oath yesterday, it is sufficient. Then she sighed and said, of a truth, you do burden me too much. The bishop still insisted, still commanded, but he could not move her. At last he gave it up, and turned her over for the day's inquest to an old hand at tricks, and traps and deceptive plausibilities, Beaupierre, a doctor of theology. Now notice the form of this sleek strategist's first remark flung out in an easy, offhand way that would have thrown any unwatchful person off his guard. Now, Joan, the matter is very simple. Just speak up and frankly and truly answer the questions which I am going to ask you, as you have sworn to do. It was a failure. Joan was not asleep. She saw the artifice. She said, no. You could ask me things which I could not tell you and would not. Then, reflecting upon how profane and out of character it was for these ministers of God to be prying into matters which had proceeded from his hands under the awful seal of his secrecy, she added, with a warning note in her tone, if you were well informed concerning me, you would wish me out of your hands. I have done nothing but by revelation. Beaupierre changed his attack, and began an approach from another quarter. he would slip upon her, you see, under cover of innocent and unimportant questions. Did he learn any trade at home? Yes, to sew and to spin. Then the invincible soldier, victor of Patay, conqueror of the lion Talbot, deliverer of Orleans, restorer of a king's crown, commander-in-chief of a nation's armies, straightened herself proudly up, gave her head a little toss, and said with Navi complacency, "And when it comes to that, I am not afraid to be matched against any woman in Rouen." The crowd of spectators broke out with applause which pleased Joan, and there was many a friendly and petting smile to be seen. But Cochin stormed at the people, and warned them to keep still and mind their manners. Beaupierre asked other questions. Then, had you other occupations at home? Yes. I helped my mother in the household work, and went to the pastures with the sheep and the cattle. Her voice trembled a little, but one could hardly notice it. As for me, it brought those old enchanted days flooding back to me, and I could not see what I was writing for a little while. Beaupierre cautiously edged along up with other questions toward the forbidden ground, and finally repeated a question which he had refused to answer a little while back as to whether as he had received the Eucharist in those days at other festivals than that of Easter. Joan merely said, "Passes out three." Or, as one might say, "Pass on to matters which you are privileged to pry into." I heard a member of the court say to a neighbor, "As a rule, witnesses are but dull creatures, and an easy prey, yes, and easily embarrassed, easily frightened, but truly one can neither scare this child nor find her dozing." Presently the house pricked up its ears, and began to listen eagerly, for Beaupierre began to touch upon Joan's voices, a matter of consuming interest and curiosity to everybody. His purpose was to trick her into heedless sayings that could indicate that the voices had sometimes given her evil advice, hence, that they had come from Satan, you see. To have dealing with the devil well, that would send her to the stake in brief order, and that was the deliberate end and aim of this trial. When did you first hear these voices?
I was 13 when I first heard a voice coming from God, to help me to live well. I was frightened. It came at midday, in my father's garden in the summer.
Had you been fasting?
Yes.
The day before?
No.
From what direction did it come?
From the right, from toward the church.
Did it come with a bright light?
Oh, indeed yes.
It was brilliant. When I came into France I often heard the voices very loud.
What did the voice sound like?
It was a noble voice, and I thought it was sent to me from God. The third time I heard it, I recognized it as being an angel's.
You could understand it?
Quite easily. It was always clear.
What advice did it give you, as to the salvation of your soul?
It told me to live rightly, and be regular in attendance upon the services of the church.
And it told me, that I must go to France.
In what species of form did the voice appear?
Joan looked suspiciously at the priest a moment, then said, tranquilly,
"As to that, I will not tell you."
Did the voice seek you often?
Yes.
Twice or three times a week, saying, "Leave your village, and go to France."
Apostrophe, did your father know about your departure?
No.
The voice said, "Go to France, therefore I could not abide at home any longer."
What else did it say?
That I should raise the siege of Orleans.
Was that all?
No, I was to go to Vaucouleurs, and Robert de Baudricourt would give me soldiers to go with me to France. And I answered, saying that I was a poor girl who did not know how to ride, neither how to fight. Then she told how she was balked and interrupted at Vaucouleurs, but finally got her soldiers, and began her march.
How were you dressed?
The court of Poitiers had distinctly decided and decreed that as God had appointed her to do a man's work, it was meet, and no scandal to religion, that she should dress as a man. But no matter, this court was ready to use any and all weapons against Joan, even broken and discredited ones, and much was going to be made of this one before this trial should end.
I wore a man's dress, also a sword which Robert de Baudricourt gave me, but no other weapon. Who was it that advised you to wear the dress of a man? Joan was suspicious again. She would not answer. The question was repeated. She refused again. Answer. It is a command. Passes out three, was all she said. So Beaupierre gave up the matter for the present. What did Baudricourt say to you when you left? He made them that were to go with me promise to take charge of me, and to me he said, go, and let happen what may. Apostrophe at the incapera. After a good deal of questioning upon other matters, she was asked again about her attire. She said it was necessary for her to dress as a man. Did your voice advise it? Joan merely answered placidly. I believe my voice gave me good advice. It was all that could be got out of her, so the questions wandered to other matters, and finally to her first meeting with the King of China. She said she chose out the king, who was unknown to her, by the revelation of her voices. All that happened at that time was gone over. Finally. Do you still hear those voices? They come to me every day. What do you ask of them? I have never asked of them any recompense, but the salvation of my soul. Did the voice always urge you to follow the army? He is creeping upon her again. She answered. It required me to remain behind at St. Denis. I would have obeyed, if I had been free, but I was helpless by my wound, and the knights carried me away by force. When were you wounded? I was wounded in the moat before Paris, in the assault. The next question reveals what Beaupierre had been leading up to. Was it a feast day? You see, the suggestion that a voice coming from God would hardly advise, or permit the violation, by war and bloodshed, of a sacred day. Joan was troubled a moment, then she answered yes, it was a feast day. Now then, tell this. Did you hold it right to make the attack on such a day? This was a shot which might make the first breach in a wall which had suffered no damage thus far. There was immediate silence in the court, and intense expectancy noticeable all about. But Joan disappointed the house. She merely made a slight little motion with her hand, as when one brushes away a fly, and said with reposeful indifference. Passes out three. Smiles danced for a moment in some of the sternest faces there, and several men even laughed outright. The trap had been long and laboriously prepared. It fell, and was empty. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.